This is the Goggler Podcast, Bahir and Uma with you. Today we're going to be talking about a requel or legacyquel.
Do we have a proper definition for that yet?
I think we do. So I think legacyquel is like an official-ish term.
Okay.
The term was coined back in 2015 by Matt Singer of Screen Crush, and he was talking about Star Wars The Force Awakens, because he was talking about how with Star Wars The Force Awakens, we are living in the age of the legacyquel, right? And
okay.
The definition of that is essentially revitalizing an old franchise, but in particular by bringing back heritage characters,
right,
and old-timey actors to give it a bit of that nostalgia boost while at the same time balancing it with a new cast of characters that you want to push the franchise forward.
Okay, so the Ghostbusters is a perfect example, right? Ghostbusters 2 is a sequel to Ghostbusters 1. The all-female version is a reboot.
Correct.
And then the new one is a legacyquel.
Ghostbusters 2 is a sequel. Ghostbusters Afterlife is a requel or legacyquel. But the all-female-led Ghostbusters is a reboot of the franchise.
It's a reboot because it's not even in the same universe, right?
Despite having the original cast kind of cameo in it, it still doesn't count as a legacyquel because they weren't playing the characters. They originated. That's right.
Yeah.
Sometimes it goes too far because if you look at what they did with The Force Awakens and Last Jedi and Skywalker, what happened was it felt almost like the classic characters overpowered the narrative because everyone was so excited to see them that even though Lando Calrissian was in it for 5 seconds, you were still, like, they didn't do enough to make you care about Finn and Poe and Rey, right? And that was the problem with those movies.
That was something that was special to Episode 9 because Episode 8, we all agree, is a fairly strong...
I think it's the best one yet, but...
Yeah. So I think 7 did its job to launch it again. 8 was an actual legacyquel in that it was trying to tell an actual different narrative story.
Correct.
And then number 9, Rise of Skywalker, you know, whatever it's called, just sort of bungled everything up because they leaned hard on... Look at who's showing up now, you know? I think that's kind of what you're trying to do with, what you're trying to say with when you say that sometimes it goes too far with the legacyquel thing.
And that's what makes these movies bad, right? Those are the bad ones. I think sometimes when they just try to continue the story, like they're doing with Cobra Kai, for example, that's an example of a good one. Where it's not really trying to get the kids to spin off into their own little adventures. They still want to tell the story of the original Karate Kid as well. At least those are good examples of requels and legacyquels.
Yep.
And Scream, which is the movie we're going to be talking about on today's podcast, I think is a fantastic example of a requel or a legacyquel. Now,
okay,
you had your booster shot, so you couldn't come to the press screening.
Well, I've been doing podcasts and or shows in public like this for about 4 years, 5 years now, I go.
Probably longer.
So everybody knows I don't like horror. So I think it comes both as a surprise and not as a surprise that I'm fairly certain I haven't seen any Scream films.
Right.
Just set the tone for this. Now, when you came out of Scream, Uma, you specifically said, but hey, I think you're going to like this one. Now, why did you say that? Because obviously I've softened my stance on the horror thriller genre because in the last 18, 24 months, there have been some surprises. There have been some films that I've been forced to sit down to watch and kind of enjoy it.
Fear Street being the main
example. Fear Street being the easy example to grab at. So why do you think I will like this?
So I think you will like this because it isn't your typical slasher flick. And which is why I think you would like the first 3 Scream movies as well. Scream 4 was all right. It wasn't a great one. It was an attempt at a requel in some ways. But it just didn't... I think it was ambitious, but it didn't land. I think you will like the Scream franchise in particular because it is a meta slasher flick, but it isn't a parody. So if you remember the Scary Movie franchise, also made by the same studio, which is really fucking weird, right? But anyway, the Scary Movie franchise like takes all of those Scary Movie tropes and makes fun of it and then pushes it to the comic extreme. What the Scream movies do is take those Scary Movie tropes, take those conversations that you and I have on a regular basis when we're talking about horror films, about, oh, always going into the basement, or don't answer the door, or turn on the lights, goddammit, run now, you know, and all of these things, right? Don't say you'll be right back. Don't have sex, because if you have sex, you will die. It takes all of those tropes and kind of makes it knowing within the franchise. So that's the whole concept of the film, right? When Kevin Williamson wrote those scripts back in the day, back in 1996, when the first movie came out, the idea was to take those conversations and put these individuals who know about horror films in a horror film. So these murders happening around them, and they all know, oh my God, just look behind you, look behind you, look behind you. Why aren't you looking behind you? You're going to get stabbed, you know, that kind of stuff. And so The Scream was built off of that meta narrative. And this movie, what it does and why it's quite clever is in the last 25 years since the first Scream movie, obviously, what we know about horror and the horror movies we've seen with Jordan Peele, with The Babadook, with Hereditary, with all of these films, it's changed, right? The genre has changed in a certain way. And the conversations around the genre have changed, not just because they don't just happen on the water cooler and now they're on Twitter and Reddit and all of that stuff, but also what we consider and what we define to be horror has changed. And so what they've done is they've kind of integrated all of these new things into this meta narrative.
Okay.
So the opening... this movie opens the same way the last one does. So the last one opens with Drew Barrymore taking a phone call and she gets killed, right?
Well, when you say the last one, you're referring to the first one.
The first one, the very first one from 1996. Yep. This one opens with Jenny Ortega's character, Tara, getting a phone call. Same kind of thing. The psycho on the phone is like challenging her to a movie quiz. And obviously she gets one question wrong and she gets brutalized by a guy in the ghost face mask. That's in the trailer. That's how the last movie begins as well, the 1996 movie. In this one, however, she doesn't die.
Right.
She goes into hospital, and that brings her estranged sister, Sam, back into town, right? Sam's been away. She's got her own secrets. And like Neve Campbell's character, Sydney Prescott, Sam, too, has this dark past that we are learning about, that she's kept a secret for a very long time, and it seems like someone has discovered what it is.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a whodunit. There's the ghost face mask killer, and everyone is on the case. They bring back, like, if you've seen a single poster of this show, you know Courtney Cox, David Arquette, and Neve Campbell are back. They're on all the posters. And of course, they bring back the legacy characters, and everyone is on this whodunit to find out who is the ghost face killer.
Yeah.
That's the plot of the film.
Okay.
But it's the meta conversations, it's the jokes, it's the set pieces, all of that's crafted really well. So with regards to a requel, this one is a very knowing movie and it knows what it's doing. It's not as subversive as the original.
Okay.
It isn't going to inspire a series of copycats because it in itself is a copycat.
Okay.
But it is an incredibly entertaining film. And I think that is the reason why you will like it.
Is it just called Scream?
So it should be Scream 5, or it should be 5 C-R-E-A-M.
Okay, so it's just called Scream.
No,
so
it's just not, called Scream. But the reason why it isn't called Scream 5 or 5 Cream is explained in the movie as a joke.
Can I also just say 5 Cream? Very bad. Also not 5 Cream, not great.
Not great.
But is it then safe to say that this succeeds in where Halloween Kills from last year completely shat the bed?
This succeeds in the same way where Halloween succeeded, right?
But not Halloween Kills.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
So
okay.
What's interesting is all of these questions you're asking me is name checked in the movie. And that's why it's so funny.
Oh, interesting.
They talk about Halloween. They talk about Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Oh, wow.
They talk, there's a huge explanation about requels and legacy sequels. They talk about why it's not, why, like, so in the Scream universe, there are a series of movies called Stab, which are based on the real events that happen in the Scream universe, right?
Oh, okay.
And so there's a long-running joke as well about how Stab, there are 8 sequels. There's like Stab 8, and the fans absolutely hate it, and it's directed by Rian Johnson.
Ouch.
Yeah. So it's because it's betrayed the original.
That feels like the writers standing up for
Rian Johnson, right? There. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
So there's all of this humor. So it's a very, very smart movie, and I think that's what I enjoyed. However, I do have one big fucking caveat.
Okay.
It's not scary at all.
Oh.
And so I think it got so caught up in the meta-narrative and being this clever film that it failed completely in being scary.
Which is job number one for a Scream film, right?
So when you watch the original, and I urge you to watch the original, I think it may be on Netflix, but at least the first one, right?
Okay.
That opening sequence with Drew Barrymore in the house is incredible. Like, even though I've seen it so many times, and I love that movie, like, the way it's shot, the way Wes Craven shoots that, the way she's stalked and hunted within her own house, because she's essentially trapped or locked within her own house, and this person, this Ghostface killer, is hunting her, it is genuinely scary, like, tense.
And this is sort of the problem that I see talking to people who are new to cinema. And by that, I mean younger people, right? Sure, you've seen Jurassic Park, but you don't know what it was like to see a Brontosaurus in 1994.
Oh my God,
walking
no.
like it. You know what I mean?
It's like, you kids have it easy with all the CGI these days. Those things blew our minds.
But here's the thing. I don't think they have it easy. I think that they've been drip-fed on cinema since day zero that they no longer get amazed by these things. And the point I'm trying to make is the fact that I've seen that Drew Barrymore Scream sequence so many times, and I've seen it discussed in academic circles as a way to break audience expectations, because she's a famous person, but she isn't the last girl.
She's the first girl.
Right? She's literally the first girl, right? So academically, I know those things. So I don't know how that scene will play out when I'm watching it as part of a 90-minute feature, as a 90-minute story. But no, I think you're right. I think it's definitely something I should watch. I think it's one of those little bugbears I have, those little sort of holes in my cinematic education that I keep sort of dodging and avoiding.
But not just that. I think the meta-narrative that was introduced in that movie inspired a lot of what we see today, right? So whether it's a Netflix TV show or the conversations that people have within films about films and TV.
About films, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't quite break the fourth wall, but it comes very, very close to doing it.
Yeah.
For me, the movie that this version of Scream owes its greatest debt to isn't actually the original Scream, but actually its predecessor. So Wes Craven's New Nightmare was the seventh installment of a Nightmare on Elm Street franchise.
Sure.
And it wasn't a direct sequel, but it was a kind of meta horror in which Freddy Krueger is a fictional movie villain who comes into the real world and haunts the cast and crew who make movies about him. So that came out 2 years before or 3 years before the 1996 Scream.
Right.
And so that was I'm going to call it ambitious, but had its failings. That's what I'm going to say about that movie.
But it opened the door to this new conversation, this new form of horror storytelling.
That movie had some very complex and interesting questions about the impact of horror movies on those who make it and those who watch it. And I think this movie does the same. And that's where this movie is at its most intriguing. The problem with this movie could have been scarier. Like, the set pieces are cool, but not scary. So, like, there's an attack at a hospital very early on in the movie. Very, very cool, because very unexpected, because it's daytime at a hospital.
Right.
And it's not a time when you think something will happen. You think being unpredictable in that way, it should be terrifying. But even the jump scares didn't get me. And there aren't many jump scares, but even the easy ones didn't get me. And I don't know why that is. And I think maybe it's because it's almost too perfect. Like, the movie is so crafted, right? There are no rough edges in this film, or it doesn't feel like there are many rough edges in this film. I had a great time. I just wished it was... I'm going to see a horror movie. I want to be scared, at least a little bit.
What is the homework I need to do to watch this? Like, if I was going to go watch it tomorrow, should I need to watch one through four? Is there a story chain that I'm supposed to be following here?
So all of the young characters that you meet are in some way connected because they're all in the town of Woodsboro, right? And Woodsboro is this kind of small town where no one ever leaves, or if you leave, you never come back kind of thing, right? And so they're all kind of connected in some way to the original characters.
Right.
Even if only indirectly. But you don't need to know that to enjoy this movie.
Okay.
If you've seen the first one, like I have, if you're a fan of the first one, there's a little bit of a thrill seeing Courtney Cox, Neve Campbell, and David Arquette back on screen together, and that's always fun. But it really isn't something...
It's got no baggage that it needs to carry forward.
There isn't any baggage, but also the references aren't smug. And the references aren't... Like, they're self-aware, but they aren't like a too... They aren't too wink-wink, nudge-nudge, you know? And so in that sense, I think the movie stands alone perfectly well by itself. Everything you need to know about those original characters, the legacy characters, are explained within the film itself. So it's very well written in that sense. I mean, there's a line, I think, which is in the trailer, which kind of tells you everything you need to know about Neve Campbell's Sidney Prescott. I think David Arquette's like, he's back. Do you have a gun? And the line is, I'm Sidney fucking Prescott. Of course I have a gun. Right. Yeah. And that's all you need to know. Right. Like pretty much. Yeah. You get the idea. She's been hunted before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very tight. You don't need to know any homework. But if you've seen the first movie before watching this one, you get a little bit more of a kick at some of the Easter eggs and references. That's about it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I've been seeing a lot of mentions of Wes Craven in this film. Like, it's dedicated to him at the end of the film.
Yeah. So it's dedicated, just says for Wes. One of the characters is called Wes.
Oh, nice. Okay.
The main character, Tara, and her sister, Sam, both have the surname Carpenter, which I'm assuming is a nod to John Carpenter, because I don't remember anyone having the surname Carpenter in the original film.
That feels cute. That feels sweet and nice, and that not in any way slavish or...
And it's not slavish in a good way as well, because, you know, those recreations of original scenes, so like the first opening scene, the first scene in the movie and the last scene in the movie are... recreations of or homages to the original. So the last scenes in the film, the third act, takes place at a party. But these movies always end at a party.
Yeah. There's always a party somewhere. Yeah.
But there's always a small twist on all of them. So they're not just paying homage to it.
It doesn't play out like you expect.
No. And they're doing some clever little twists and I guess clever little visual shifts as well that make it work. So yeah, I really enjoyed this film.
Have you done me wrong when you tell me there's some things that I like that I haven't? Gee, no, not really. I don't think you have. I think you've been pretty spot on mostly.
I think I have a pretty good idea of what are the kind of shit that gets your goat and what you really enjoy.
I'm fairly one-dimensional that way. but it's
I still
it's
don't
weird.
Understand your love for the Eternals, but
yeah. We'll let but that now go. You know that there is.
We'll let that go.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. But I think there feels like there's a period, even in Hollywood horror filmmaking, that I sort of fall out of. Like, I've seen the first Halloween. For me, it doesn't do anything for me. But
But
things like The Shining, I love. The Exorcist, I really liked. You know what I mean? So there's a clear point where it becomes maybe, it feels like that point is when the filmmakers want you to leave the cinema thinking, oh my God, that kill was gory, as opposed to talking about how scary the ghost was or how fucked up that is when you turn a corner and see these creepy twins or a butler going down on a guy in a bear suit. You know, it's that it feels like they want the conversation to be on how much blood there is or how gory that murder was or the body part or the body pieces. And that... it's stuff like that really turns me off, because I feel like the writers are dropping the ball on telling a story and more just trying to make murder events in a film.
Yeah, they're trying to shock you, right?
That shock horror thing just I don't find very enjoyable at all.
And there's an audience for that. I mean, and there are all of these schlocky horror movies that just push the envelope with every sequel on how much gorier or violent you can get. And fine, that's great. There's an audience for that. But I understand where you're coming from, which is why I think you like Scream, not just because of the story that it's telling. It's weird. The Scream movies have twists that are both unpredictable and predictable. And I say that in the sense that they're predictable because they fall into the horror movie tropes, but they're unpredictable because of the way the story is told. it leaves you enough red herrings to make you think twice about what is going on. So it's very clever in that sense, right?
It toes that line between not disappointing a fan who want to see the tropes, but at the same time satisfying the fan because they want to see something different. That sounds like a fun time out.
And it doesn't trip into parody, lah. And I think that's what's good. Like in that opening sequence, when she's on the phone with the psychopath, he asks her, what's your favorite scary movie? Which is the big line that Drew Barrymore gets asked as well. And only in this one, she says, oh, you know, it's not a slasher flick. I like the elevated horror movies like The Babadook. And then the caller makes fun of it as well, right? So it's very knowing in that sense of, it makes fun of the discourse that cineasts have about horror movies too.
Yep. Oh, that's cool.
It's cool. Yeah. I really enjoy it. I mean, go check it out. You have to. And it's also worth watching. It's the kind of movie that's definitely worth watching in the cinema because you have an audience that is going to get with you and and try to figure it out along the way, because at the end of the day, it is very much a whodunit.
Oh, okay, cool.
Scream is now showing in Malaysian cinemas, and we strongly urge you to go check it out. Whether or not you've seen the originals, and even if you haven't, they are on one of the many streaming services that are available to us. So you can probably watch. The only problem is I don't know if they're in order. So sometimes Netflix has Scream 1 and Scream 3, but no Scream 2.
Right.
Yeah. But go check it out. Let us know what you think about it once you've seen it. You know how to get in touch. You've got all of our social media feeds, GogglerMY, also podcast@goggler.my. Don't forget, you can WhatsApp us on the Goggler hotline. That's 012-524-5208. Get in touch. Talk to us about Scream. Thank you so much for listening. This is the Goggler Podcast.